3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, June 2nd. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Before we get into the episode, we have a request. We want to hear from you. So if you're listening on Spotify, look for our poll under the episode description or send us an email to tnb@wsj.com to tell us your favorite part of the show. Brief news headlines, in-depth reporter chats, deep dive miniseries, or something else. Today, we're going to talk about generative artificial intelligence, which can do a lot. But when it comes to writing software code, some chief information officers say it could be doing too much. Our enterprise technology reporter, Isabel Bousquet, joins us to discuss why AI-generated code is a potential problem for CIOs and their companies. But first, regulators in the European Union plan to subject Twitter to a stress test to determine how well it complies with Europe's new digital content law. That's according to a top EU tech regulator. Thierry Breton said in an interview with the Journal that the test is voluntary and won't carry any fines or consequences. The moderation programs of other platforms may also be put through their paces to make sure companies meet new EU standards that take effect this summer. Brenton added that Twitter has agreed to be subjected to the test. Twitter officials in Europe and the US didn't respond to requests for comment. In the past, Twitter's owner Elon Musk said the company plans to comply with EU law. The Pentagon has agreed to pay SpaceX to offer satellite internet in Ukraine. The decision comes after months of discussions about whether the U.S. military would fund the service during the country's war with Russia. A spokesman for the Defense Department confirmed the deal on Thursday, but declined to discuss specifics. SpaceX's satellite-powered internet Starlink has provided high-speed internet connections to Ukrainian government agencies and armed forces since February of last year, 2 days after the Russian invasion. But CEO Elon Musk said the company couldn't fund the service in Ukraine indefinitely. Meta has unveiled the latest version of its virtual reality headset called Meta Quest 3. In an Instagram post yesterday, CEO Mark Zuckerberg said the headset will be 40% thinner than past versions and powered by a new chip from Qualcomm. He added that Meta's new VR headset is expected to go on sale this fall with a starting price of $499. The announcement comes days ahead of Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, where the iPhone maker is expected to debut its first mixed reality headset. A chatbot named Tessa has been taken offline after the program, which was designed to help people suffering from disordered eating, started giving weight loss advice. The National Eating Disorders Association, which operates Tessa, said it was looking into what happened. Of course, this all comes at a moment when eating disorders are on the rise, weight loss drugs are disrupting the diet industry, and chatbots, along with full-fledged AI assistants, are starting to change the way we get healthcare and information. For more on this, we're joined now by WSJ family and tech columnist Julie Jargon. So Julie, to start with, can you give us a little background on this chatbot? When was it launched and who created it?
The chatbot named Tessa was originally designed by researchers at several universities, including Washington University School of Medicine and Stanford University School of Medicine. And they designed this chatbot to try to fill a gap in care that exists when it comes to eating disorders. There are few doctors and a lot of people who need this kind of help. And they were trying to develop something that would be preventative. So they designed this chatbot that would help, through conversation, guide people to reframe their own thoughts about body image in an effort to try to reduce the development of eating disorders. They did a clinical trial on it. It showed good results. And then the National Eating Disorders Association decided to adopt this chatbot for use on its website in February 2022.
How did the problems with it first come to light?
The problems first came to light over the Memorial Day weekend. There had been some news in the past week about the National Eating Disorders Association shutting down its helpline, which is an information line staffed by humans. And there were news reports about that that got people interested in learning more about TESA, which is not, according to NIDA, supposed to be a replacement for the helpline. But people knew about the chatbot and decided to test it out. So there were some eating disorder advocates who asked it some questions about weight loss and received some answers, answers that you wouldn't expect from the National Eating Disorders Association, with advice on how to lose weight and weigh yourself every day.
That seems like pretty shocking advice for people who are reaching out to the National Eating Disorders Association.
Yes, it is. And I spoke with the CEO of NIDA, and she said that type of advice clearly violates NIDA's policies. And that's why the organization took the chatbot down.
Let's just get something straight, though, because TESA, it isn't supposed to be a generative AI chatbot. I mean, we've seen mistakes, so-called hallucinations from other generative AI chatbots, but that's not what TESA is, right?
Well, that's not what it was designed to be. The university researchers who developed TESA worked on it for a few years. It was incapable of providing unscripted answers. There were a set of answers that were developed to respond to any type of question that might come without the ability to go off the rails. They don't know yet what happened. A new company took over the administration of the chatbot. It's named Cass. And their CEO told me that the company uses AI to understand what users are typing, and that some of its other chatbots that it has developed have generative AI. But he didn't answer the question I asked him about whether this TESA chatbot had generative features. They say that they're investigating what went wrong.
And so what happens next?
So TESA is going to remain down until this investigation is complete. The CEO of NIDA said it won't go back up until they can ensure that it's a closed system that can't generate responses outside of the strict guardrails that initially had been put in place.
All right, that's our family and tech columnist, Julie Jargon. Okay, in a moment, we'll find out why AI might be making things too easy for software developers and why that's got chief information officers worried. That's after the break.
Are your coworkers doing things that really get under your skin?
Heating up seafood in the microwave, because the entire office ends up smelling like marshes.
A lot of reply alls. It could have been just to one person.
When people don't take care of the office, I think they're slobs.
More and more of us are back at the office. And you know who else is at the office? Other people. And they can be really annoying. But before you snap, find out how to handle those quirky coworkers on As We Work from the Wall Street Journal.
Generative artificial intelligence can do a lot. Create a picture, compose an email, and write computer code. Already, a lot of Fortune 100 companies are using AI to generate code, from Johnson & Johnson to United Airlines and Goldman Sachs. But some IT executives are worried about all of those new lines of software, and not necessarily for the reasons you may think. With me to discuss that is our reporter, Isabel Bousquet. Isabel, so just at a very high level, what kind of code can AI write?
Essentially, if you think about a software programmer's job, they're just sitting there typing away, and these generative AI coding tools, GitHub Copilot is the big one right now, essentially just work to suggest portions of code. And if you think about the way ChatGPT works, by suggesting the next logical words in a sequence, they sort of function similarly to just suggest the next type of logical chunks. They're not writing entire applications, but they can be really helpful in helping developers get from point A to point B a little bit faster.
Right. Like you said, that sounds helpful. So why are IT professionals raising some concerns?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's super helpful if you're a software developer, but if you're a CIO or the IT chief of a big organization, suddenly you're dealing with a situation in which your developers have the ability to be writing a ton more code than they ever were before. And also with these tools, there's the idea that if you are not an expert software developer, you could also, you know, throw your hat into the ring, start writing new code, new applications, start creating new software. And so the amount of software that can be created, it could go up exponentially. And that's a concern for CIOs because they're the ones that have to manage that software. They have to ensure it's all up to date. They have to keep it organized.
For the people who haven't written code or haven't done much software development before that are now using these programs, what are they dealing with? Or what are the things that they're going to need to keep in mind according to the CIOs that you spoke with?
One interesting thing here is that the skill set for developers is going to look very different than it has in the past. And so while in the past you might have been creating something out of nothing, now you're very much functioning as someone who's going to be doing more and more checking over work. So in that sense, like the skill set is really changing. There have been things called low-code and no-code tools that have been around for a while. And the whole idea behind those was that they would democratize software development and that people who were not developers would suddenly be writing tons of code. And there are sort of varying perspectives about the extent to which that's come to fruition. And so I think in some ways, these kinds of tools are a continuing progression of that narrative.
And for the CIOs who are saying, there's just going to be too much, we don't know how to deal with it, what steps are they taking to deal with this?
Yeah, I think the most important thing they can do is just make sure they have the right guardrails in place and they just have the right sort of controls and checks around any software that's completed or put out, that they're just doing enough work to ensure that it's not shoddy, poor code that's going to immediately need to be updated as soon as it comes out. And, you know, also just ensure that there's a purpose for every piece of code that's being built.
All right, that was our enterprise tech reporter, Isabel Bousquet. And that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. TNB's producer is Julie Chang, our supervising producer is Melanie Roy, and our executive producer is Chris Sinsley. I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.